Good morning and welcome to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Gwyneth Doland. The state legislature wrapped up its 30-day stint in Santa Fe last Thursday, after accomplishing several must-do tasks. They passed a budget, came to a compromise fix on driver's licenses, and passed a package of capital outlay money for public works projects. This show is part of KUNM's People, Power, and Democracy project. We'll be covering ethics, accountability, and transparency in government with our partners New Mexico In Depth, New Mexico PBS, and the New Mexico Newsport at UNM. The project is funded by the Thornburg Foundation. People's faith in government is remarkably low right now, and most of the reforms that civic and business groups had been clamoring for failed to make it through the closed ranks of longtime lawmakers on both sides of the aisle. Why did lawmakers not feel pushed to respond this way to public demands for reform? Why did they not feel that perception of corruption continues to affect the state's sluggish economy? Or did they just not like any of these ideas? With me today is Matthew Reitbach. He is the editor of the New Mexico Political Report. Welcome to the show, Matt.
Thanks for having me.
And Mylon Simonich is with the Santa Fe New Mexican. Thanks for being with us, Mylon.
Thank you.
Mylon, several lawmakers told me this session, well, we're not sure we're going to have time to deal with any of this stuff, like the Ethics Commission or, you know, exposing some of the independent money in politics, because we're here to pass a budget. Does that strike you as fair? Do people try to pile on too much stuff in one of these 30-day sessions?
This year they did because the budget projections kept falling. They started with $280 million, $290 million in projected new revenues. Then it was down to $30 million, and then it fell into negative territory. So the budget should have been the primary focus and didn't get as much focus as it should have.
Because when there's no money, people don't even try to do new stuff. But when there's no money, they know, don't even try. But when there is money, like we thought there was going to be, people say, ooh, I know how to spend some of that, right?
Well, there's some of that. But the other issue is when your revenues are sliding, how are you going to make sure that the prisons are properly staffed when you already have high vacancy rates? How are you going to keep social workers in these demanding jobs that people leave all the time? So the budget, when you're down, becomes even more important because you're trying to maintain services.
Right. Matt, very few lawmakers are actually involved in doing the real heavy lifting on the budget. A small number of people on the big finance committee, they do most of this stuff, right?
Yeah, on the House side, there's the House Appropriations and Finance Committee, and they're losing one of their key minds this year in Lucky Barella. On the Senate side, it's mostly the Senate Finance Committee, and that's the domain of John Arthur Smith, where legislation that isn't the budget goes to die. And sometimes I wonder if the budget would go there to die if they didn't have to pass it.
But that there's a lot of people in the building who are talking about other stuff a lot of the time, right?
Yeah, there are. But also in the back of their mind, everything has to come back to the budget, because a lot of these bills you see, oh, this is a great idea. But then there's an appropriation. Oh, it's only a $200,000 appropriation. That might not be in the final budget. And that means that bill is basically just a dead bill walking. So you'll see a lot of times in the first weeks of the session going into one of those House Appropriations Committee, especially, they hear a bill and then they're, or the House Ways and Means, and they hear a bill and they just table it. And they're like, if we have money, we'll pass it.
So it goes to purgatory.
Yeah, there's a lot of bills that go to purgatory in the first couple of weeks and you never hear about them again. Even if they sound like good ideas, there's some stuff under the surface that maybe they didn't like so much.
Mylon, how do you think the public would rate the legislature's performance this session?
Probably a C minus or a D. Not very good, because there wasn't that much discussion on budget. And when you get into the idea that we have to make cuts, then they didn't do a lot of debate on the floor about that. It was, as Matt said, left to mostly the committees, and you're doing, instead of being selective with the cuts. We'll take a percentage point here, a percentage point there, instead of a careful examination of what program might be cut altogether and what other program might be enhanced because it's important. You didn't get a lot of those kinds of discussions.
Let me make a bad analogy. You have all your groceries on the conveyor belt and you find out you have less cash in your purse than you thought. And instead of going through and picking out the milk and the bread and the meat, you just cut off the last 10 items on the conveyor belt, no matter what they are, sort of?
Something like that. I think more it was you're cutting a little bit from everything as opposed to really debating the budget. What are we doing that we don't need to do? And what aren't we doing that should be done? Or what aren't we funding sufficiently? You don't hear those kinds of vigorous floor debates about the budget.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I covered a bill that would have asked for more program evaluation, more information for lawmakers about, you know, how well some of the programs are doing so that they can look at that when they go in to fund certain things. And the fact is, we're probably funding a lot of programs that aren't really working. We just don't really know it.
Well, there's some of that. And beyond that, though, I mean, they know that the prisons are understaffed. When you have correctional officers working 16-hour days, mandatory overtime, you know that you don't have enough people there. And this state has a history that everyone knows about, the 1980 riot at the penitentiary of New Mexico. So when you're into those sorts of budget issues, there ought to be more intensity of, are we funding these basic programs? And at the same time you have that, you had all these crime bills being pushed by the House Republicans to lengthen sentences. Those may or may not be good policy, but they cost money either way. However you fall down on it philosophically, whether you think we should be increasing the sentences, if you do that, you're going to put more people in prison for longer times, and therefore you've increased the cost. So none of that was done on the front end in the House. They just passed their crime bills, mostly to increase sentences, sent them to the Senate, and then revenues keep falling. So now you have the extra equation built in there. You're going to put more people away, and you have less money to do it.
Listeners, we want to know what you think. Are you satisfied with the job your elected officials did in Santa Fe this winter? Call us now. The number is 277-5866 here in Albuquerque. That's 277-5866 or toll-free 877-899-5866. I want to pivot to the Ethics Commission bills. Matt, you have been watching these with me for 8 years or so. Can you give us a brief history of the previous attempts to create an independent Ethics Commission?
Well, if I want to go really brief, I could just say they pass the House, then they die in the Senate. But and as you mentioned, we've been covering this for 8 years, but it's been going on for about 10 years when Bill Richardson actually was a huge proponent of an ethics commission. And he had a task force, a blue ribbon task force for ethics. And their number one, and this was in 2006, and their number one piece of advice was to have an ethics commission. So then it passed the House and it died in the Senate. So then he had another commission and they said, seriously, do an ethics commission. And then didn't happen then. There was a couple special sessions where he pushed it, and every year it's kind of, sometimes it passes unanimously through the House, sometimes it passes with wide bipartisan support, but I think it's passed about 5 or 6 times now out of the House, and then it goes to the Senate Rules Committee, which is not very friendly to the idea of an ethics commission, because senators say they can police themselves. Look, we kicked out Phil Grego last year, who violated the state constitution. But a lot of other people are saying, well, there's a lot of other ethical things that are going on that maybe need to be dealt with. But right now they just get shunted off to these secretive committees where nothing ever happens. The Phil Griego situation is the first I can ever remember, maybe back since they censured a state representative like in the 90s, I believe.
Yeah. Mylon, these proposals we've been talking about since 2006, they're all a little bit different in one way or another. But the one we saw this year was maybe more different than the ones we've looked at in the past few years. You covered this. What did you think of the proposal that Representative Jim Dines brought to the legislature this year?
Well, The part that bothered me was to say this is an independent ethics commission. The commission that Representative Dines proposed would have been appointed by politicians, and therefore I don't know how independent any of it becomes. It did have some interesting features. If a complaint was made, it would have to be made with a name attached to it, nothing anonymous, and the person accused would not see the complaint become public until that person had a chance to respond. And a frivolous complaint would have been outed by this commission. My question with all of this is, why do we need it? I've lived in states that have it. I kept hearing, well, we're one of eight states that doesn't have it. I've lived in Pennsylvania, Colorado, places that have it. I don't remember ethics commissions there doing much of anything. And there's certainly a lot of corruption in Pennsylvania. People that I wrote about in the legislature there are in prison now. The idea that we need this when you sent Diana Duran to jail and removed her from office for both criminal and ethical violations. Matt mentioned Senator Griego, who resigned rather than face the possibility of expulsion from the Senate. Those would indicate that the system worked. Now, you could always argue that there are unethical things going on, and no doubt there probably are. The question becomes, you create another bureaucracy when you already have police, an attorney general, a secretary of state. Granted, the last one we had was corrupt, so she was part of the problem. But you have all these agencies already built in to watch.
But Mylan,
let
me push back a little bit. You know, the Phil Griego thing came about almost exclusively because of the media. And, the Diana Duran situation was a tip called into the attorney general's office. But that, I mean, they never do that.
What's wrong with that?
Well, what's wrong with that is that they don't have the resources to do as much of it as some people would say we need. I mean, nobody,
Diana Duran was cooking the books on her own campaign report so she could steal campaign donations. She's having to manipulate the system. She's responsible for overseeing that. The fact that a criminal tip was made to the attorney general and eventually followed by this attorney general, not the last one, shows that somebody who was in charge of policing campaign donations but was violating it actually got caught. That was another check and balance in the system. The media is part of that. Phil Griego, based on a report in the Santa Fe Reporter that started the whole issue of whether he was fit to stay in office. But all of those are good checks and balances. Why do you need another politically appointed agency to do those things? Maybe it's a good idea. Maybe it's not. But I the House passed it so quickly and without much tough questioning of it, you're going to spend more money. And that was another thing. That one wouldn't have started till 2017 in terms of the expense. But it was about $1.3 million, as I recall, to create another commission.
Yeah. Folks, we want to know what you think about the possibility that corrupt activity by state and local officials might be going unnoticed or unpunished, some amount of it. So call in now and let us know what you think. We are here at 277-5866 in Albuquerque. That's 277-5866 or toll free 877-899-5866. You can also post to our Facebook page, KUNM Radio, or tweet at KUNM News and use the hashtag NMGoodGov. That's GOODGOV. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Do you love spending most of your day working on a computer? Do you have strong database and some accounting experience? KUNM is hiring a donor data relations specialist to work in Razor's Edge and Visual Traffic. If you're adept at complex software, detail-oriented, with excellent time management skills, apply by March 9th, full-time with benefits. Join a great team and a great cause. Go to KUNM.org. Look for job openings in the pull-down menu under About KUNM.
Next time on Peace Talks Radio, one of our guests says her work isn't actually about conflict resolution.
We're not trying to solve conflict in the world. We're actually in some ways saying we should promote conflict. But what we should be promoting is better ways to deal with it other than taking up the gun and the bomb, as so many of our people do.
That's scholar Mari Fitstuff, also Emile Bruneau, on the neuroscience of peacemaking next time on Peace Talks Radio, Friday morning at 8 on KUNM.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Gwyneth Doland. We're talking about what state lawmakers did or didn't do to restore public trust during this year's legislative session. My guests today are Matt Reichbach of the New Mexico Political Report, Mylon Simonich of the Santa Fe New Mexican, and joining us now is Jason Espinoza, the president of the Association of Commerce and Industry. Welcome to the Call-In Show, Jason.
Thanks for having me.
Jason, you represent hundreds of business owners across the state, and new research from UNM shows that New Mexico has a culture of what they called crony capitalism that makes it hard to do business here. Was an ethics commission part of what you guys were looking at this year?
You know, certainly, you know, the ethics commission and other transparency and good government reforms was really a hot topic of debate among my members during the interim. And our sort of angle on it is different. What businesses need is predictability and clarity within a system. You know, our business owners, they're small business owners. They want to engage in the system. They want to make contributions. They want to be part of the process. But what we've seen is the rules are ambiguous. They're not even sure what they can do, what they can't do. And so when we look at these proposals, what we like about them is that they bring clarity to the system so that everyone knows what the rules are and how to play by them.
Let's go to the phones right now and hear from some of our callers. We have David in Santa Fe. Welcome to the show, David. Good morning. David, do we have you? I will come back to David. Let's hear from James in Santa Fe. James, good morning. Welcome to the Call-In Show. Well, we might be having a little bit of...
Nobody wants to talk to us,
I know, technical difficulties here. So, you know, I used to live in Dede Feldman's district, and so I still get her email newsletter. She was a senator from the North Valley. And I noticed in her email the other day, she had been a big proponent of ethics and campaign finance reform before she left office. She said the ethics initiatives were victims of a short session, which we all know most bills are, but... She also said they were victims of political moves designed to kill them. Did you see that, Jason?
You know, I'm not sure I agree with that statement. You know, what I did see a lot this legislative session was folks coming together and actually trying to work together on certain proposals that needed to get done. You know, Mylon alluded to earlier, there was a big budget session, you know, losing a lot of revenues. And so they focused on other issues. You know, there were some big wins for the business community that we did see come out of the legislative session, you know, dealing with unemployment insurance. A lot of businesses were seeing their rates skyrocket 300-400%. And for a small business, a lot of times that meant $85,000 coming out of their bottom line. And these are, you know, businesses that were hoping to hire more New Mexicans, get them on the payroll, but they couldn't. So, you know, I just think there was a lot in this session, a lot to do. And we'll see what happens in the next session.
Mylon, you mentioned earlier how many bills kind of flew through the House. Do you think there was an element of, let's pass this stuff because we know it's going to die in the Senate?
No, I don't think it was that. I think it was let's pass this stuff because it's campaign fodder. We're going to pass crime bills, and then if senators vote against them, the Republican House is pushing bills over, then they have footage of Democrats in the Senate voting against it, and that becomes part of the 2016 legislative campaign. I think a lot of those, I mean, one of the bills that went through the House very quickly was to make police officers a protected class in terms of hate crimes. Therefore, you'd get an enhanced sentence. Well, anyone who harms a police officer already gets maximum prosecution. So, but they pushed that over. Was that really an important bill in a budget session? And it ended up dying in the Senate. And in fact, a retired police officer in the House was one of the few House members who voted against it, Patricio Rialoba. He thought it was not done for any legitimate purpose, but for a campaign purpose. So I think a lot of that was campaign messages. I mean, why all the emphasis on crime bills in a 30-day session? But there was no message. You talked about ethics earlier. No placing on the agenda of Representative Matthew McQueen's bill to take away the pensions of corrupt public officials. If we're going to be talking about crime, that was a white-collar crime bill, but it didn't get any traction. So a lot of this had to do more with campaigning, setting up for campaigns, than it did with policy.
Matt, you know, former Senator Feldman also criticized the governor for either failing to add important things to the agenda, as Mylon just mentioned, or doing it really late in the session. Is that a subtle way of killing things while saying you supported them? Or is it just, does it take time for the governor to look over this stuff and some of those messages just happen to come down late?
I'm sure that she would argue the latter, but I think that a lot of it does come down to campaigning and stuff. And she's trying to dictate what's getting discussed when. So if you notice, they orchestrated all these crime bills coming out in the first half of the session. And the first half was pretty acrimonious between the House and the Senate. And then somewhere around the midpoint of the session, I think they realized, oh, yeah, we have to work together. And they started passing some stuff and the budget started happening. So I think that they kind of got together, and maybe it was the budget situation that made them actually think we have to actually work together. But I think that she plays in a lot of this. Obviously, she's in contact with House leadership now that they're controlled by Republicans. And she kind of dictates, well, we're going to do this, we're going to do this, we're going to do this. That's kind of the sense a lot of people have up there in the roundhouse.
Mylon, one of the topics we've been talking about right now is jobs, job creation, the economy. That's what Jason was up there talking about the whole session. You know, we did a previous show about this research showing business groups are making the connection between honest, accountable, Jason says, predictable government and a healthy economy. Is this something that you think the readers of the Santa Fe New Mexican see, or is this just a push by business that sort of exists out there in its separate world?
Well, people everywhere are interested in the economy and in what can help business. There was a business bill that captured a lot of attention in Santa Fe that would have taken away the rights of home rule cities such as Santa Fe to pay a higher minimum wage. The minimum wage in Santa Fe is $10.91 an hour. Statewide, it's $7.50. There was a bill pushed by two Republicans, one senator, one House member, to cut those wages and make it so cities couldn't pay that. That got a lot of attention because people who are at the bottom end of the pay scale, and there are a lot of service workers in Santa Fe, would have lost money. That one, that bill ultimately was amended by the sponsors, and I don't think it passed anyway, but they took out that section after a lot of protest. But people are always interested in implications for business, and whether it's unemployment insurance or the minimum wage, or taking away the minimum wage. Yeah, there's lots of interest in that.
We should say Mylon is talking to us from his newsroom, so you'll hear phones and no.
Sorry about that.
No typewriters clacking anymore, but some phones ringing. Let's go to our phones and hear from David in Santa Fe. Good morning, David, and welcome to the KUNM call-in show.
Yeah, hi, good morning. I'm the CEO of a healthcare technology here in Santa Fe, which I started 5 years ago. And, you know, I'm trying to hire people in New Mexico to work for us. And I just find it incredibly disappointing to hear that the legislature and the governor would not support proper and increased funding of healthcare, of education here, particularly when we have a $15 billion permanent fund that has been created years ago to support education and for, quote, rainy day. And I would say it's pouring right now in the state of New Mexico with the abysmal measures in education and achievement by our students here. So, you know, it's just quite disappointing to live in a state where we do have the resources to support education, and yet it appears to be the last priority of our elected officials.
David, I think, you know, we talked earlier about how there was so little money in the budget this year, and there has been this push to tap the permanent fund for education. But was one of your priorities looking at, you know, making the government a little bit more honest and accountable to the people? Was that something you cared about as much as education?
Yes. You know, I think it's all part and parcel of it, in that it's, you know, looking for the government to actually respond to the needs of the people in the state of New Mexico. And for some reason, and I moved from New York in 2009, and it's just shocking and disappointing to me that our elected officials don't seem to have the best interests of the people in New Mexico at heart.
David, thank you for talking to us this morning. Mylan, you've reported on government in other states. Are we just really down on ourselves, or is government here as dysfunctional as the critics say it is?
Well, it's dysfunctional, but that doesn't mean that it's not other dysfunctional elsewhere, too. I think here, because you have a part-time legislature that doesn't get a salary, I wrote my column about that this week, that you don't get the best talent because you get a lot of retirees, a lot of public employees, and some wealthy people who can run. A lot of other people can't. That's a big problem. Other states don't do that. Is there corruption elsewhere? Absolutely there is. Probably in many cases more than you have here, because in the East, I think you have a more ingrained culture of corruption than you do here. You've got the Diana Durans and the Phil Griegos here who... But also, I think because it's a small state, only 2 million people, every case here gets a lot of attention compared to a larger eastern state or even some of the western states where you have much bigger populations. So everything seems magnified.
That's a good point. Mylan, thank you so much for sharing your reporting and your observations with us today. We love having you on the show.
Thanks for the invitation. It was a lot of fun.
Jason, I want to come back to you and ask you, do you think that having an ethics commission would actively encourage more businesses to locate here? Would it actively encourage local existing businesses to grow and expand?
You know, I think it does help set up the environment that we do need. You know, I talked about predictability and clarity again. And the unfortunate thing right now is New Mexico's in the news oftentimes, you know, about these corruption, high profile cases with Diana Duran and others. And when folks are looking to relocate to New Mexico and start a business here, that does play into it. So I think New Mexico is just looking for something to address that issue. How do we look like we're moving forward and we want to do the right thing? And I think business owners want to see New Mexico do the right thing. And put something in place that is going to protect New Mexicans and businesses.
Let's go to the phones. I want to hear from Andres in Rio Arriba County. Welcome to the show, Andres. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. You know, I know you guys are very busy there, but I've been tuning in the last month or so. Reason is I just retired from education. I was there about 30 years, and I want to touch a little bit on jobs. You know, I think a lot of our problem relies on jobs. We don't have enough jobs. We're too reliant on oil. We haven't focused on solar and other avenues that would give jobs to our youth and that would keep them interested and not have to get into troublemaking and everything else. What do you say about that?
Well, Jason?
Yeah, well, I agree with you there. You know, when we look at the budget crisis that we face this year, it's because New Mexico's, you know, really reliant on one industry, oil and gas. And so really, you know, illustrates the need for New Mexico to continue to work and diversify our economy and really grow the private sector so that we can create jobs for everyday New Mexicans. And one of the things that I do want to applaud the legislature on doing is, you know, despite the tight budget, they did put forward some great appropriations for economic development. You know, they put $1.25 million towards the Rapid Workforce Development Fund. So that's to help identify gaps in our workforce that we have. They could fund higher ed, whether it be UNM or CNM, and start new programs so that we're training the workforce in the next generation.
I want to, Andres, ask you, you know, what do you think the solar industry could really bring to New Mexico? Is this an unlimited possibility, or is this kind of a niche business in our economy?
I think my personal opinion is I think we're like 50 years behind in technology solar where we should be. And again, it would again, just the research itself and it would self pay for itself and create more jobs. And in the long run, we'd be more we'd still be dependent on oil, but we would have more diversification as far as heating our homes. And like you said, the sky's the limit on what we could do. And we could be the forerunners on technology and implementation of solar. And that's like, you know, like they say, the sun's free. We utilize it. We can utilize it and put these kids to work. We have kids graduating from high school that can't find a job or just, you know, they just lose hope or whatever. And like the billboard says, graduate today, unemployed tomorrow. And then what happens after that, you know, and we're going to pay the bill one way or the other. And, you know, either overcrowding in prisons, not enough guards. See, the trickle effect starts, in my opinion, my personal opinion, starts with unemployment. And then it trickles all down. Thank you very much. That's all I have to say. Thank you for taking my call.
Andres, thank you for that. And just to recap on the solar energy tax, the rooftop solar tax credit, that failed, right, Jason?
Yeah, no, it did. There was an attempt, I think, on the House floor to amend it into a bill late in the session, and that did fail.
Matt?
Yeah, it's something that actually Susana Martinez line item pocket vetoed last year. And this year, there just wasn't the money for it. And even though everyone kind of supports it, it would it basically lets people put solar on their roof for cheaper. Like, they give them a little bit of a tax credit. And this year, it went through the process, and just this year it didn't pass. So that means that the tax credit's done for now. Maybe, I guess, Mimi Stewart will come back next year again and try it again.
You mentioned pocket veto, which means that the governor didn't act on it. She just kind of let it fall away. And that's something that's a little bit unusual that we do here in New Mexico. It's a little bit of a quiet way of acting on something that the public doesn't really observe. On that same note, let's go and bring in Susan Bowe. She's the executive director of the New Mexico Foundation for Open Government, and she is with us now. Welcome to the show, Susan.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Susan, we've been talking about the connection between business and ethics. Is that connection between the state's economy and economic development and jobs, is that something you discussed with lawmakers when you were trying to persuade them to pass an ethics commission bill?
It was one of many issues. You've probably talked about the fact that a recent survey that was conducted here in the state said that there is a link between those two issues, that businesses need to feel that they're getting a fair shake. And it's hard to create that sort of image or picture of New Mexico when we have sent quite a few of our public officials to jail. And an ethics commission, we think, would send a strong message that New Mexico is doing something about it.
Well, you know, the leaders that we talked to in the state Senate said they are doing something about it, that their ethics commission in the legislature is working fine, and they really don't think they need something new. You worked closely with the sponsor, Jim Dines, who's a transparency advocate. Are you going to work more with him over the session to bring that back next year?
We will be somewhat involved in this. As you know, Gwyneth, generally FOG has not been real active in ethics issues, and primarily because all of the previous ethics bills that have come before the legislature have been really clouded in obscurity, and it's very difficult to find out who filed the complaint, how the process is working. And what we liked about Representative Dines's bill, and in the interest of full disclosure, he at one time was on our board, but as an attorney, he also fights quite hard for transparency. But in any event, he reached out to us early on in the process and asked, what are the transparency provisions that you could live with and support? And the one that was eventually passed, by the bill that was eventually passed by the House, but obviously not by the Senate, provided that both the original complaint and the response would be released at the same time. Therefore, they both would get equal coverage. And in an ideal FOG world, we would like to have the initial complaint immediately released, but we thought it was a reasonable compromise to wait until the response was filed, and therefore there would just be a real small time of confidentiality, and we felt that we could live with that.
You know, one transparency thing that did pass this session was the House's decision to archive the webcast of its proceedings in committee and on the floor. Why is that significant, Susan?
It's significant because New Mexico is one of the few states that doesn't really have a legislative history. And this is going to allow people who have day jobs and cannot stay home and watch the webcast or go down to the roundhouse and watch the proceedings live, that they're going to be able to see what exactly was happening on the House floor, who said what, how did people vote.
Jason, do you have members who are sitting there in their offices like, I really cannot take a break from this meeting to watch this committee online right now?
You know, we do have a lot of members that do want to participate in the process. And, you know, I'll give credit to the House and Speaker Tripp. When they came in 2 years ago and they took over the House, he said, we're going to set up a very regimented schedule and we're going to start our committees on time. And that has actually allowed, I think, you know, our members and our business owners, but everyday New Mexicans, too, if they're going to come up for a committee, they know that committee is going to start out of time and hopefully get their bill heard. And I just think this adds to that type of thing. It allows people to be involved in the process and know what's going on.
Matt, I'm not going to be shy. Starting on time and archiving the webcasts is great for journalists.
Yeah, it definitely helps us, especially if you want to go back and you want to check a quote. Did I just hear that? If you don't have your phone recording, then right now it's kind of like, I hope that I heard that. So you kind of keep your phone recording all the time.
Or you're trying to be in three places at once. And,
yeah.
You know.
And I mean, I'm looking back to when we started and we're just trying to get webcasting in general going. Like they had audio and that's it. So now we're kind of taking the small steps forward. But now the next step is to work on those folks in the Senate Rules Committee and see if they can send the webcast archiving to the Senate side also.
Let's hear a little bit from folks on the phones. We have Nick in Santa Fe. Nick, good morning and welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me. I wanted to speak a little bit to the revenue issues, involving not only increased costs with incarceration, but also the budget shortfalls. I heard a little bit about, the possibility of raising gross receipts tax on food or initiating gross receipts tax on food, but I didn't hear much about going in the direction that our neighbors to the north did with recreational marijuana, which has been a huge, tax source for them, has lowered crime up there, and, seems like it could be of help to us in a situation where we're running out of money.
Nick, thank you for that point. It wouldn't be a call-in show if we didn't get to talk about taxing marijuana. Let's talk to Sophia in Albuquerque because she's got another idea about how to bring in more money. Sophia, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. My question is, why don't we add like a 10-cent tax to the gallon gasoline price? We're so used to paying higher gas prices, and our whole economy in New Mexico depends on it. So in Europe, the gasoline is heavily subsidized, not heavily subsidized like we do in the U.S., and it would just be such an easy thing to do.
Sophia, thank you for that point. There was a proposal to raise tax on gas this session, but it was deemed politically not feasible. Jason, did your members have any opinion on raising the gas tax?
There's a lot of infrastructure issues in the state, a lot of critical infrastructure that needs to be dealt with. And so we talked about it in the, perspective of that. But what we would like to see really is more efficient use of those dollars. So another bill, a sort of transparency, good government bill that was introduced this session, House Bill 307 dealt with capital outlay reform. How do we address critical infrastructure projects and take out the politics, but really look at the policies and what are statewide infrastructure projects? How does that relate to economic development and what we need in the state? And we think we should look at how do we efficiently spend our money, strategically use it before we look at raising taxes.
That's a really good point. And the connection there is we say that we need more infrastructure all the time, and we do devote money to it. But critics at your former employer, think New Mexico, say we're not effectively using those dollars, and there should have been more transparency, and there should have been a better system for doing it. Let's take a quick break, and we'll keep talking about transparency in state government. Do you think it's easy enough for you to figure out what's happening in state government and get involved? Is it easy enough for you to understand where our money's coming from, what we're taxing, what we're not, how we're spending that money, whether it's on education or anything else? Have you ever tried to go to Santa Fe for a meeting and not been successful? Call in now with your questions and comments. The number is 277-5866 here in Albuquerque. That's 277-586 or toll free 877-899-5866. You can also email callinshow@kunm.org, post to our Facebook page, KUNM Radio, or tweet at KUNM News. We'll be right back.
If you're getting a new car this year, consider giving the old one to KUNM as a 50th anniversary gift. In addition to our sincere gratitude, you'll get a hefty tax deduction and a KUNM membership just in time for those 50th anniversary celebrations. Donated cars and trucks are a big reason we've been able to reach this milestone year, for real. So call today to see if your car or truck qualifies. 888-KUNM-CAR, that's 888-586-6227.
Wherever you turn, Shakespeare's there.
Neither a borrower nor a lender be.
You have not experienced Shakespeare until you have read him in the original Klingon.
Romeo and Juliet.
I'm Sam Waterston. Join me for Shakespeare in American Life from the Folger Shakespeare Library.
Romeo was restless, he was ready to kill. He jumped out the window because...
Sunday morning at 11 on 89.9 KUNM.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Gwyneth Doland, and I am here with Susan Bowe of the Foundation for Open Government, Matt Reichbach of the New Mexico Political Report, and Jason Espinoza with the Association of Commerce and Industry. Susan, we often talk about how hard it is for regular people to follow the budget-making process. In New Mexico, unlike other states, the public does have access to some of those open meetings where the budget is discussed. But you criticized the legislature this year for not being so open with the budget process.
Well, I think the number one issue that faced us during the last legislative session was the economy. And certainly the budget and how we're going to allocate dwindling state resources would be an important issue that the public needs to observe how those hard decisions are being made. And the many of the budget meetings that either the House Finance Committee had or the Senate, or the Appropriations and Finance or the Senate Finance Committee had, were closed to the public. There was a quorum of lawmakers who were present, and we have to assume that they were not in the room talking about social issues, that they were talking about the budget. In fact, in one case, we knew that, in fact, the House committee was talking about where are we going to make budgetary cuts. Now, under the Open Meetings Act, there are separate rules that apply to the legislature, but it was Fogg's position that even under the statute that was the Open Meetings Act statute, which was passed by the legislature, that the legislature was violating the law as it applied to them.
Because it basically says all these meetings should be open.
Yes.
So, Jason, would you have liked to have been in some of those meetings watching where the pork chops were trimmed?
I mean, we certainly have a great interest in them. You know, our members, since we're across industry, I mean, healthcare and the Medicaid funding was very important to ACI in terms of making sure that we, appropriate enough money to get the federal match. You know, that's a huge economic driver in the state. Healthcare is one of the only growing industries in the state, so we wanted to make sure that. So, I mean, it really would be interesting to be a fly on the wall in those conversations as they happen.
Matt, what does it mean for you to not be able to get into some of those meetings and hear how they're really hashing it out?
Well, for us, it means a lot that we're reporting on what happened afterwards. Like, we have a story up today that Joey Peters wrote about the behavioral health cuts that are happening and how a lot of providers are scared about that. So, and it's actually a pretty big story, and it's a pretty important story, and it would have been probably more big and important if we knew that it was coming beforehand and we could write about it then. But now we're just kind of playing catch up.
And, you know, I should mention that the KUNM Public Health Project has been reporting on that for a long time. But let's hear, back on the subject of money and the budget, let's hear from Alan in Albuquerque. Alan, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I have a question. I'm a native New Mexican, and I've heard for years that we're the top money gatherer as a state of federal funds, federal money. And I don't understand how that happens. You know, if that's true, and I think it is because I've kind of back checked it. What's happening? I mean, if we have all this extra money coming more than any other state, I don't understand why we're so poor.
Alan, thank you for that question. We may have a higher percentage of federal money coming to the state, but does that mean we're rolling in it, Jason?
You know, not these days, you know, certainly back in the days where we had Pete Domenici over there in Congress and we were able to get huge allocations for our national labs and other things. But, you know, with sequestration and the economy, when that hit, we can no longer be reliant. We're not seeing growth in those sectors. And so really, that just, again, impresses the need for the private sector, the real private sector, to grow here in the state.
Susan, there was one small measure. I mean, of all the things we've been spending the whole session talking about, the Ethics Commission shining a light on independent expenditures in campaign finance, you know, money in lobbying, money all over the place. There was really one thing that passed, and that was supposed to help us see just some of those connections between lobbyists, organizations, and politicians. How is that going to work?
In terms of the changes to the Secretary of State site?
Yeah, so it's going to change the website?
Yes. There was a measure, and it was House Bill 105, that was sponsored by Representative Jim Smith and Senator Ivy Soto, and it's been kicking around for the last year, that would approve access to information, which would include contributions that were made to different candidates' political campaigns, as well as lobbyist information and who the lobbyists were giving money to. And both FOG and Common Cause for the last year have been working behind the scenes with the Secretary of State's office, and this even predated the resignation of Diana Duran, with our complaints that, gosh, this information is not as usable. It's in what we call PDF form. And that means that either citizens or journalists are not able to truly follow the money.
So
you can sit down and do it painstakingly, but it's just not as effective to be able to, as you said, connect the dots.
Matt, you and I are political reporters. We do it because we love it. But even we don't love digging through campaign finance reports. What is this going to mean for the public, that they're going to flip some switches and make some software connections on the Secretary of State's website that's going to, like, point some data from here to there? What does that mean for the public?
Well, the hope is that it makes everything a lot clearer, because we saw, you know, some TV reports about, hey, these people are, they didn't report these donations, and they looked at it for weeks and weeks and weeks of reporting is what they said. And then they found, oh, wait, they did report them. It's just that the system is terrible. So this is going to fix that, hopefully, which makes our job a lot easier, so we can find the actual problems.
Jason, you said earlier that your members do want to participate in the process. They want to support candidates that they like. Are they frustrated with the campaign finance system that we have now, the actual computer system?
Well, yeah, I mean, one of the things that did come out of it, you know, that the system is certainly confusing, and we're not able to see, you know, a lobbyist may have made a contribution, but it's not reported here, but it's reported here. And a lot of that, again, came from, you know, our understanding is ambiguity in how things are supposed to be reported and who's supposed to do the reporting. So anything we can do to bring clarity so that we know what we're supposed to do, we all want to play by the rules. We just need to know what those are.
Matt, you know, this did make it through, although it got some really, you know, tough hearings. Do you think politics in Santa Fe are getting just to be too much? Every member's up for election this November, and the rhetoric is tougher than ever. You wrote about a number of representatives who for sure aren't coming back next year. There's three of them who decided to retire, two more leaving to run for different offices. At least one just didn't want to run again. Is this more than usual, or is this a kind of normal level of turnover?
Well, I think we're going to see more, too, in the coming days. These are just the ones who've said so far they want to. We have until March to figure out when some of these ones who aren't. But I think, like Conrad James, that kind of surprised a lot of people, because he's a very popular up-and-coming Republican, and he's just like, I'm done. I'm out of here.
But I think he fought pretty hard to get that seat back.
Yeah, yeah. And that, but then there's people like Diane Hamilton, who's been there forever, and there's Carol Lavelle, who's undergoing cancer treatment, those kind of people. I think we're going to see a couple more surprises, I think. But we also have Nick Salazar's running again, and he's been there since before I was born.
Do you think that the politics are weighing people down, that it's not so much what they went there to do anymore?
I think that these past couple years have been among the most brutal that I've covered. And I think that they can keep saying, we're not like Washington, D.C. We're not like, you know, we're not like all those people in Congress, but they're getting there. I mean, it's the politics are getting so much more brutal than they were in past years. It used to be, you know, the House and the Senate have always fought against each other, but it seems like these past few years there's a press conference every day where the leadership of the Senate is defending themselves against the House and vice versa. And then we have these, you know, these other the victims' families are attacking Michael Sanchez, and it was just bad. It was so bad this year. It was not as much, I don't want to say fun, but it was it was kind of tough going up there some days because it's just so brutal. It's like a slog getting through this 30 days.
It can be fun, Jason. It's even fun for you sometimes, isn't it?
It certainly is. You know, people ask me how I'm recovering for the session. I always tell them, you know, I got beat up a lot at the session, but at the end of the day, we were able to get good wins, and it makes it all worth it.
Susan, many of these are going to be really tough elections in a hyper-politicized year. Do you think that environment has anything to do with lawmakers' reluctance to act on things like exposing money in politics, cracking down on ethics, changing the capital outlay system that critics call a method for delivering political pork? Is political pressure preventing some people from taking tough votes?
I think it might be, and the human condition is resistant to change. And just as many said in connection with forming a new ethics commission, oh, we've already got one in place, it works fine, that often we need to have drastic events happen that would prompt change. Although, on the other hand, one would think that because this is election year, that our legislators would want to say, hey, look at this, I voted for transparency. I voted for change and for helping to clean up New Mexico.
Matt, is there a political risk to some of these candidates in not doing anything? You know, many newspapers and civic groups vocally endorsed, for example, creating an ethics commission. Do you think you're going to see, you know, mailers or ads saying, you know, this candidate voted against having an ethics commission?
I think that we will, but I wonder how much of effect it's going to have because it's happened for 10 years now. And I mean, there's a lot of these things that have widespread support, but it's not people's number one issue. So it's like, so maybe like marijuana, it's a lot of people support marijuana, but there's a very small percentage where it's their number one issue. So that's why, maybe that's one reason we don't see movement on that. Same thing with transparency. A lot of people say they support transparency, but when push comes to shove, they're going to be thinking about the economy, about jobs and that sort of stuff. And transparency, unfortunately, is not at the top of that list.
These issues undergird you know, all of those other things. Jason, is next year the year that you're going to see some of the things that the business community pushed for, more transparency, more ethics?
You know, I think, you know, the business community is certainly going to, you know, support the efforts. It's, you know, as we talked about this, you know, during the radio show, it's certainly connected to the economy and jobs, which is the number one issue. So we hope to see more discussion and push it again.
Thank you all for joining us today on the KUNM Call-In Show. First, thank you to our guests, Mylon Simonich of the Santa Fe New Mexican, Jason Espinoza of the Association of Commerce and Industry. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And Matt Reichbach from the New Mexico Political Report. Thank you for talking with us.
Yeah, it was great.
Susan Bowe from the Foundation for Open Government. Thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you.
We have posted links to the information we discussed today, so check those out at KUNM.org. We also have a whole bunch of stories on our website related to the issues we were talking today, so feel free to cruise around and see some of our past coverage. If you missed any of our program or you'd like to share it with friends, the audio of this show will be posted on our website. You can also find previous shows. Thank you to Jefferson White, our engineer today. Kaveh Movahed screened your calls. Anna Landy assisted with production. Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. This show is part of our People, Power, and Democracy Project, a collaboration between KUNM, New Mexico in Depth, New Mexico PBS, and the New Mexico Newsport at UNM. It's focused on ethics, transparency, and accountability in state and local government. Find links to all of our project content online at KUNM.org. Funding for the project comes from the Thornburg Foundation. I'm your host, Gwyneth Doland.